Hello, Guitar Smarts listeners. This is an important announcement. Please don't skip ahead. We start this podcast with a special message. Way back in 2021, Guitar Smarts had the pleasure of interviewing the utterly fantastic Matt Long. Matt is a multiple award-winning British blues guitarist and lead singer of the British blues band Catfish and hard rock outfit The Revenant Ones. He joined us for episode number 20 and was a truly gracious guest who spoke about his career, his childhood, guitars, and meeting his hero, Joe Bonamassa. Well, Matt needs your help. Through 2023, Matt has been undergoing treatment for bowel cancer, and his recent prognosis has meant that to extend his life and retain a chance of survival, he needs to seek private treatment outside of the NHS. Matt's family have set up a GoFundMe page that is linked in the Guitar Smarts link tree in the description of this podcast, and we at the Guitar Smarts podcast would like to invite each and every listener to consider donating towards this fund that could well save the life of one of the brightest guitar talents of our generation. Now is the time, folks. Head on over to the link in the description to find the GoFundMe page. Donate what you can. Your donation could save a life. Thank you. Enjoy the podcast.
So that's why you're starting to see some exciting guitar-related nuggets dropping from the sky.
Beautifully put. Guitar-related nuggets dropping from the sky. That could almost be a like a Blink-182 lyric or something. Anyway, sorry. Carry on.
You heard it here first. I think it's because I'm hungry. Yeah. Although nuggets wouldn't be my food of choice anyway. So
this is definitely going in the intro.
Greetings! Welcome back to the Guitar Smarts podcast. Remember, if you are an everyday gigging guitarist, this is the podcast for you. It's that time of year when all the latest and greatest in guitars and guitar-related products are released and exhibited at the NAMM exhibition in Anaheim, California. So this week, Kieran and I are looking at some of the news and product releases and just general chit-chat that took our interest, and maybe they'll take yours too. There are new guitars from Harley Benton, Gibson, great story from JHS Pedals, and there's also some bittersweet news from one of the largest brands in guitar history. Anyway, housekeeping. Remember, like and subscribe to this podcast on your preferred podcast app. That way you won't miss any shows. There is a link tree in the description of the show where you can follow links to our Buy Me a Coffee page, links to some of our Spotify playlists, social media pages, but especially the Guitar Geek Hangout page on Facebook. That's where you can interact with Kieran and myself and many other guitar nerds just like us. And if you really want to support us, then use the links to leave us a rating or a review. This really is the best way to support us. It helps us to grow, and more importantly, it costs you nothing but a little bit of your time. Anyway, have a great couple of weeks. Remember, if you've got any comments or requests for the show, you can reach out to us through our social media pages. That's about enough from me. Let's get to it.
How you doing, Kieran? You well, mate?
I'm really well. Yeah, thanks, buddy. Yeah, had a good week. Been really busy. Out and about. I've had a few nights away from home with work. And every day this week, actually, I've been out and about with work, which has made a nice change, not being sat behind the desk working from home. But yeah, I'm looking forward to next week. I've got next week off for the Easter holidays. Yeah. Kids are off school. Unfortunately, the weather is looking pretty dire here. So just before I jumped on the call with you, I was frantically looking to see if there's anywhere that I could just put us onto a plane and fly off somewhere. But my strategy to try and bag something last minute where, you know, surely prices will crash 24 hours before you want to go anywhere because they're desperately trying to fill the last remaining seats. That strategy didn't work. It's astronomical. The prices have gone up three times than they were last week. It's just bonkers, absolutely bonkers. So yeah, we'll probably stay here and find lots of exciting things to do. But yeah, I'm looking forward to a week off next week. How about you, buddy? How's your week been?
Yeah, my week's been good, mate. I mean, been very busy because of the same reason. I'm off next week as well. So got the week off. We're going down to the South Coast for a little break just for four nights next week. So
nice.
Really looking forward to it because it's been a mad first quarter. Yeah. You know, kind of you have these sales cycles, right? When you're working kind of somewhere close to sales, then you know, you get to the end of the quarter and it's a bit mad. So yeah, it's good that this break's coming now because it's been a mad first part of the year. But yeah, other than that, mate, I'm really good. I do have some guitar related news, and I know we're talking about guitar news today, but I'm super excited to tell you about something that I've done this week, which is I've rewired the Les Paul. Finally got around to rewiring the Les Paul, the Epiphone. Right, I've been saying for ages, haven't I, that it's needed a rewire. So I kind of this week I ordered, or was it the end of last week? I can't remember. I ordered from a company here in the UK called Six String Supplies. I ordered a component set for a Les Paul. So that includes, you know, the CTS ports, it includes all the wiring, includes the jack socket and the orange drop capacitors and shrink sleeving and everything. I also ordered the Switchcraft switch from them. So like we're talking a proper upgrade. So this is kind of like top spec components. You know, the kind of stuff you get off a US instrument maybe.
Exactly.
And I then spent, I think it was Tuesday night or Wednesday night, soldering all this stuff in, you know, made a nice little template for everything to connect into and solder. It was super easy, and then fitted everything in. It's gone in so neatly and everything works perfectly. And oh my God, the difference I thought would be subtle. It's not subtle at all compared to cheaper components that were in the instrument beforehand. Those pickups, do you remember those pickups you very kindly got me last year around my birthday? Those Iron Gear pickups, they've just opened up. I can't quite explain it. You probably know what I'm talking about, but they sound like they've opened up in kind of like a capability. You know, whereas before, it's almost like you didn't realize somebody was talking to you with the hand over their mouth.
And now is it that marked?
It's kind of like these pickups now sound more articulate. There's more dynamic range to them, I would even say. It's quite astounding, actually. This, you know, this is an investment I've made in the guitar for, you know, way under £100, you know, buying these components and a little bit of time to fit them. And it's transformed the instrument, in fact, to the point where I was playing the instrument, you know, I was playing it at home after doing it and just be like, this is madness. This guitar, you know, deserves more. And so I then went online onto Northwest Guitars and I've ordered a new bone nut for it. I've ordered a new pickup surround because one of them's got a crack in it. I'm like, no, that needs fixing now. This guitar now needs to have these flaws taken care of. What else did I order? I've ordered a pick guard for it. It hasn't had a pick guard for about 15 years. And I'm like, no, I want to put a pick guard back on it. Deserves a pick guard back. So now I'm just on this path of just like, what? Just how good can a guitar get with these modifications? You know, so I'm thinking, do I upgrade the tuners? Do I upgrade the bridge? I mean, there's, you know, there isn't much I can't upgrade other than the wood, you know. But just how good can this guitar get with these different upgrades? So I'm kind of on a path now to, and that's when I kind of, I also messaged you about something else. That's when I kind of got to the point where I was like, actually, I could order all the parts I need to make a guitar if I wanted to make a guitar. And one of the things I've started feeling more confident about after recent podcasts and stuff like that is our ability to set up a guitar really well. Especially bolt-on guitars like Strats and Tellys, which are self, you know, they were designed that way, not just so that they would work as instruments, but so that normal non-musicians could get a job assembling them, you know. You know, you don't have to be a guitarist. You probably have to be a pretty good guitarist and craftsman to build a Les Paul, but you didn't have to be one to build a Strat or a Telly. So then I was kind of like, I'm going to price up how much it would cost for me to buy all the components to build a Telecaster. With a finished body and a finished neck, so not finishing things, but with like high end components. So I was going for like Goto, Tone Pros, Fender,
lovely
things like that, you know. And it kind of came to about, it probably would, if I was to order everything, it'd probably be about £700, and then it's my time to build it, which is probably about a day, really. But if I was to go out and buy, I was then looking at Fender's list of stuff, thinking, well, what's the equivalent Fender guitar here? And it was probably, the spec I went for, the equivalent was probably a Fender vintage or vintage professional. I can't remember the range name now, actually, but it was an £1,800 guitar. So we're talking nearly three times the cost of the components for something that on paper had about the same spec, you know, same pickups, same quality of components and things like that. So now I'm like, I've got to do this. I've got to build a guitar because I think for the cost of what I paid for that Gretsch, you know, which is an Indonesian Chinese made or whatever instrument, which I love, but for the same money, I can have effectively a USA spec instrument. And if I really take my time and be careful and work hard to set it up properly, I can have it playing and sounding just as good as any American instrument off the shelf. For sure. So I'm, you know, it's been a hell of a week of discovery for me, mate, if I'm honest.
Wow.
Thinking about what these things. Yeah.
Oh man, I'm delighted for you. Where do we start with that? So, it is probably the biggest difference you can make to an electric guitar to gut the electrics and put a new set of pickups in it.
Mm.
Everything beyond that is marginal gains. Frankly, I know as guitarists, I'm no different. I get excited by the wood that it's made of, whether it's got a maple cap on it that, you know, changes the tone properties, whether it's weight relieved versus not weight relieved, ebony fingerboards, right? All of these things that have, subtle differences to the sound of the guitar, you know, but I honestly, those are then the marginal gains and subtle differences. There is nothing more profound than changing out and gutting the electrics and putting a different set of pickups on. It is that different. And I'm so pleased you've seen that, with your Epiphone. It is great. And it is a pretty low cost mod. And not only that, now will it have opened up those pickups. You'll also get so much better options and responsiveness from the pots, so that when you are dialing back tones and volume pots, you'll just be able to work with them in a much better way because you've got better capacitors in there, better made pots that will just taper in a much more manageable fashion. So yeah, brilliant, man. It's great. Absolutely great. And you know, as you well know, it's not that difficult to do at all. That's brilliant. And I'm so pleased that you're loving those pickups as well, because you know, value for money for sure, but just a decent set of pickups at any price point, really. It's just lovely that Iron Gear pickups come at a really nice price. And then, yeah, man, as you start to get more confident and more experience doing this stuff, I tell you what, it's equally enriching from a, well, I could do this myself perspective, and what are the possibilities, and
exactly,
you know,
but
also equally frustrating. So I went into a very well-known guitar shop this week. Actually, I was working in this city in the south of the UK, called Guildford, which has a very famous guitar store, worldwide famous guitar store, that I've frequented since my youth, and have very fond memories of. And if I'm honest, I was left a bit cold when I left. And I'm not going to disparage the store in any way. They're very, very successful and all of that kind of stuff. But it wasn't a very inspiring trip, I must say. Aside from the fact that nobody asked me whether I wanted any help or was interested in selling me anything, which I thought was a bit of a missed opportunity, because I did have some money burning a hole in my pocket and was quite interested to spend some cash, but nobody seemed interested in selling, which is a different conversation around our guitar stores just really online outlets with a bit of customer facing business, but the balance has shifted. But I must say, having had a look at some of the instruments, knowing what you know now and what I know about particularly bolt-on instruments and that and how easy it is to source these materials and do it yourself, the bar gets kind of set higher and you kind of go, well, it's got to be something really special. Now, set neck stuff and some of the stuff that you get out of Gibson and other manufacturers where, you know, they've got that binding process, they've got some of those things, you kind of go, okay, I can see where the money needs to be spent. Not necessarily the Murphy Lab stuff, but off-the-shelf bolt-on neck guitars, you know, you just think, well, I could do this myself. Mm. I could do this myself. It's not that difficult. And Northwest Guitars, I think, where you spec'd it up, that's where I got all the parts for the guitar that I went on a build course a few years back now. That's where they all came from. And the guitar that we ended up with was every bit as good as the £1,000 Strat.
Easily
as good as any of that. And I think that all the components, parts, including, you know, pretty expensive bare knuckle pickups that we put in it, all of that came to about, I don't know, £600. Mm-hmm. So I could imagine what would it be another, you know, 8 or 9 years later for you to be able to spec up a similar guitar. You can do it for half the price. This is probably not revolutionary news to anyone. And I think most people just get stuck at the point of, well, I can't do that myself and it's too much hassle. But if you're any way, you know, practically inclined, I would definitely say give it a go, mate. So get those parts ordered. Let's get a plan on how you get those parts ordered. And then, we can help you build your own Strat, mate.
I kind of feel like what I actually might do is take some time to collect components over, you know what I mean? Like keep my eye out for things, for deals, for anything that comes up on eBay, you know, like, cause you know what I've been thinking? I've been thinking if I'm going to build a guitar, I might build a Clapton signature Strat. Do you know what I mean? Actually get some less sensor pickups, you know, single ply pick guard. I could probably build one. And just come across the components myself over time, you know. But the other thing is that I could also just like find a guitar that I really like and then say, all right, I'm going to try and spec one up to be like that. But you know, for anyone who's listening to this and thinking, well, I could never do that, you absolutely can. You definitely can do this because, you know what, the things that I think people may feel like they don't know what they're doing with, like, is probably the electronics. Well, do you know what? You can buy loaded pick guards and you can buy control panels for tellies that are already soldered up, or you can buy, so for example, Six String Supplies, where I got the kit from for the Les Paul, they do solderless wiring looms for the guitars. They are more expensive. But they are built specifically for people, or for projects where you don't want to have to solder in all your components. You can just, you know, kind of screw your wiring in instead. And there are ways around things that you might think is a showstopper for you if you want to build your own instrument. But, you know, there's some serious money to be saved in building your own guitar. But it's not just about that. It's about creating something unique that's yours, that you've put your heart and soul into making it, and you get to see it come alive from all those things that arrive at your door. You know, that's the key for me. It's not just about, you know, a cost-saving thing or a confidence thing or a, you know, hey, this is a good project. You know, I think you're going to end up with something ultimately that you can be more satisfied with, regardless of what quality is available on the shelf and off the rack at some stores. You know, you end up going on a bit of a journey with this instrument, and then, you know, you come away with your own Blackie, you know, or your own whatever it is, your own mongrel of an instrument.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It will be a mongrel, right? The resale value on it is not going to be the same as if it was a branded, factory-produced instrument. But if you're cool with that, and if, you know, then you will, as you say, have something that is unique to you and has your DNA in it.
Yes.
Metaphorically, obviously, not physically.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, if that's the way you want to go, it's all good. And if you are worried that you're gonna mess it up, just start off cheap. Build a Frankenstein. Get some cheap parts off eBay.
Yeah.
You know, don't get all the expensive bits first off. You know, find a secondhand neck, find a secondhand body, do a relict version, get some cheap pickups, and have a go. And you'll learn. You'll learn through that process. You'll learn a bunch of stuff. And then when you feel a little bit more confident, then you can go, okay, I'm going to do this with a bit more expensive parts and put something together that is going to be a bit more cherished. But yeah, brilliant. Brilliant, mate. That's a great revelation this week. So, fantastic. I'm pleased.
And I'm going to say, I do feel bad for you that you had a poor experience at that guitar shop when, you know, everyone, we all get excited when we go to guitar shops, except me, you know. But I just get anxious now and then angry. But I'm actually not surprised, if I'm honest, because, you know, annoying some people that work there, some personal friends and stuff like that. Apparently it's not a very nice place to work anymore. And I think they've rode the success of the, you know, maybe more online presence, to become, you know, like we said in text this week, to become more of a, kind of a, an e-commerce endeavor driven by, you know, social media and online presence rather than the good old family music store. That is, you know, that you kind of hope to visit when you do go to places like that. But not saying names. I mean, obviously, anyone listening to this can work out which guitar store we're talking about. You know, it's not, but we're not going to say it because, you know, but at the same time, you know, you can figure it out.
And look, to some extent, this is the way of the world, right? And this is the way it's going. And fair play to anyone that can sustain and grow and drive phenomenal success in any business. In this, so I think you know they've definitely kept themselves relevant and innovative. But yeah, for people like me that like that customer service, and so I'll give you another example, right? One thing I was struck with where it's like no wonder we keep seeing on the best selling instruments lists Fender, Gibson, and PRS, because that was pretty much the main instruments on display. In the main part of the shop, as well as a whole bunch of very, very cheap Far Eastern made instruments that I'd not heard of. So they'd obviously got a deal with this company, to just stock those instruments. So that's fine. All that's good. But, then the more coveted instruments, were now in this separate room, which was had a big sign above it saying, you know, entrance by appointment only. And all the kind of more premium stuff was through there. Now, bearing in mind the shop was dead and I was interested in those types of instruments and could be looking to buy one of those instruments, and expressing interest to enter that room, not one member of staff even had the thought to say, do you want to go in and have a look at what's in there? And I just thought, you said it at the start of the call, anyone that works in a sales-driven environment would be like, well, that's just a massive missed opportunity for a customer there who's standing there clearly interested and engaged and you know, there to buy, and yet nobody's interested in selling him anything. So I just thought that was crazy. And I also thought it was a bit sad, really, that those instruments are effectively hidden away now. Because I remember going into guitar shops when I was younger, and you're looking at and you buy the more cheaper instruments because that's what you can afford. But then you look at those other instruments, you don't even touch them. There's no need for you to, and they're probably, you know, too high up on the rack for you to reach anyway. But you look at them and you cover them in that true Wayne's World moment, right? You know, one day, Garth, it will be mine. Yeah. Well, that's gone, isn't it? One day somebody might, you know, let me go and have a look at these instruments behind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now you've got to drool behind some window in a door, like some kind of proletariat idiot trying to look inside some kind of, you know, canteen for, you know, it just seems wrong to me. I think there's a little bit of a super, I think there might be a little bit of a kind of a superiority complex going on there. But I, you know, I think we've probably given them enough time. Sorry to interrupt this conversation. However, if you're a regular listener, then you should definitely come and join us on our Facebook group, The Guitar Geek Hangout. You can interact with other listeners of the show, engage in general chit-chat about guitars, music and pedals, or just share images of your guitar collection for everyone to look at. Anyway, it's the next place you should visit online, so go and join The Guitar Geek Hangout on Facebook. Do it now before you carry on with this podcast. I'll wait here. Hey, welcome back. On this podcast talking about
Anyway, on to other news. Well, we've got some wonderful episodes mapped out for this year and some guests coming up this year. But for today's episode, so much has happened in the last week in guitar news that we thought, actually, there's some cool stuff that we could talk about. And some of this has only, you know, come about in the last few days, little bits of news dropping out. And I'm fairly sure it's all because of the upcoming NAMM show, which is due in April, right? So we're a few weeks away from NAMM, right?
That makes
so
sense.
This is, yeah. So that's why you're starting to see some exciting guitar related nuggets dropping from the sky.
beautifully put. Guitar-related nuggets dropping from the sky. That can almost be a you know, like a Blink 182 lyric or something. Anyway, sorry. Carry on.
You heard it here first. I think it's because I'm hungry. Yeah. Although nuggets wouldn't be my food of choice anyway. So
this is definitely going in the intro.
So first nugget. Are you ready?
Yeah.
So. This was an exciting one, actually, that I saw, which may prompt a purchase, I think. I know I've said that before, but I genuinely last night went, well, this is the reason to do it now, isn't it? So, much loved by the show, Harley Benton guitars, purchasable from Toman. Yeah. So we love Harley Benton guitars. And linking back to what you were saying, Matt, earlier in the show about getting some decent components and putting them together. Arguably, you were talking about putting them together yourself, but I think what we see here with Harley Benton guitars is actually something that bucks the trend in terms of being put together in a very cost-effective way through where they're manufactured. But some of these guitars in this series just really are impressive in terms of what you get for the spec versus the price. But Harley Benton are celebrating their 25th anniversary, which I hadn't realised.
Neither did I. I was so surprised by that. But then again, what do we know about the history of everyone, you know?
Nothing ever.
Exactly, clearly.
25 years?
Yeah, well, that's crazy.
There you go. But in commemoration of this event, they've celebrating in style with their range of guitars that they do, with really impressive specs, as you've said, affordable price tags, which we love on this show, and a very special gold finish called Fire Mist Gold.
Yeah, it's a cool finish, man. I really like it.
I like it. It's going to be one of those polarizing things where if you like gold instruments, you like them. If you don't, obviously, this isn't going to appeal.
Well, it's kind of gold, but it's almost on the edge of like copper as well. It's a really deep gold. It's really nice. I like it.
I know what you're saying, Matt, because sometimes you can see gold finishes and they look very brassy and a bit green and not very nice looking.
They're almost more like a metallic yellow, whereas this is like really very rich.
It is.
Very nice.
It is. And there's videos available online now that they've dropped in and obviously lots of stock footage. And I think even some of these Fire Mist instruments are not gloss. Some of them are this Fire Mist gold, but a kind of almost satin look to it as well, which I think looks really special. But it's available in all their kind of main shapes. So they've got their kind of S-style Fender Strat shape, which has got actually for this 25th edition, as well as having this finish, it's got like a hot rail type humbucker.
Yeah, but, I'm just looking at that one.
Single coil format in that, which is pretty. That looks really tasty. They do a Tele version, which I must say, I'm not a huge fan of the Tele body shape. Love the Tele sound, but the body shape I find a little bit kind of meh. But I must say, this one looks really nice, really tasty. I mean the one that I'm kind of very tempted by is the Fusion 2 model.
Yes. Me too, man.
Yeah.
Me too.
They
are so good. And Harley Benton's Fusion range of guitars has grown so much since we started this podcast. You know, I remember early on in the podcast, first few episodes, I think our second episode, we were even talking about cheap gear and things that we love about cheap gear. And we spoke a lot about Harley Benton. And even since then, that Fusion range of guitars, that kind of, I guess you'd call it kind of, you know, like the kind of instruments like a Guthrie Govan would play and Martin Miller, Tom Quayle. It's that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
That kind of super strat, but it's not like a, Ibanez shredders kind of thing. It's more of like a utility guitar, I almost imagine, you know, like something you could play anything on. They're beautiful. They make such good instruments. Roasted maple necks. They're killer. And these look absolutely fantastic.
Don't they? They really do. So I think this might just tip me. I've been looking at these Fusion 3 guitars for a while in that kind of same ilk as the Cort Fat guitars that we've spoken about.
Absolutely.
That kind of style of instrument, and going, either of those look really good. But I must say this 25th anniversary version in that Fire Mist gold, which is a kind of satiny gold with the Canadian roasted maple neck. Hey, look, stainless steel frets, which is, that's premium.
Yes.
That's really nice. So they'll last longer and wear better. Graftec nuts, 12-inch radius boards, Wilkinson hardware, including Trem.
Locking tuners, you know.
Locking tuners.
Comes with a decent gig bag as well.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good instrument for less than £400.
Like
£380-390 sterling. So, I'm very impressed. Very impressed indeed.
Me too. And you know, shame on you if you're thinking, you know, no, I would never get a guitar that says Harley Benton on the neck. You're missing out on an opportunity to have a really good instrument here. And you know what? You can even still decide if you want to use it as a donor instrument for upgrading to even better parts. You know, they've got these really good Tesla pickups in, which I don't think have got anything to do with Elon Musk, but they're still, you know, there's still like a range of pickups that you can swap out if you want, put something else in, like some, you know, less sensors.
Exactly. That's the thing, right? For that kind of money, you can use it as a modding platform. Do you remember when we went to the, and I think we've spoken about this on the show before, when we went to the guitar show last year?
Yeah.
And we were speaking to different luthiers, independent luthiers, etc. And I remember having a conversation with one particular luthier who was producing fantastic stuff. But he said, look, I love a Harley Benton as much as the next person, because for that money, even if you just take it and use it as a modding platform, he said, it's so cost effective to do and see how good you can make it. He said, it just so happens that a lot of them, particularly the higher end, if you can use that term for a Harley Benton, the higher end versions, he said, are actually really good. So, I think that's exciting news. And amidst all of the noise that will come out over the next few weeks around NAMM and crazy instruments and crazy stuff, I think it's nice to also represent what is at this end of the market. But that is still a very giggable, very playable guitar to be proud of.
For sure. I mean, it's a great range. Congratulations to Harley Benton. And I agree with what you're saying. It is kind of like a pre-NAMM antidote to everything that's going to kind of come out from that event, right? But I've got to say, so to kind of add, a polarizing view, I am a little bit disappointed, though, that they've only done a range of electric instruments. Because something else I think we don't, or people don't shout about enough about Harley Benton, is how vast the range of acoustic instruments is as well. Because they have this custom line as well. So as well as doing some very cheap and accessible acoustic instruments, you know, around the $100, £100 mark, you know, you get to £200 and above, you know, you get into the custom line, I think it's called, or something. And some of those instruments are absolutely stunning. Solid woods, you know, binding and all kinds of inlays and, you know, just absolutely fantastically made instruments that sound fantastic. They've just got a Harley Benton logo on the top and they're made cheaply. And I'm actually a little bit surprised they haven't done something acoustic, unless the acoustic side of the business has been a more recent thing. I don't know. Maybe there's a good reason for it. But I would have liked to have seen a couple of, you know, acoustic instruments in this list, maybe with a, you know, a Fire Mist finish. Maybe that's why.
Well, I tell you what, it's probably it's probably based on what sells the most, or the brand awareness. But do you know what, mate? I must admit, I hadn't realised that Harley Benton did acoustics. Mm. I just associated them with electrics, but it stands to reason that they would have an acoustic thing as well. So
they're just absolutely. Honestly, I mean, I'll kind of share one or two with you now. But I mean, they just make some absolutely beautiful. Acoustic instruments, and I like I said, not just from a beginner's point of view, because they do obviously have, you know, lots of price ranges. They cover a lot of different instruments, a lot of different instrument types, but here's one for you. I'll just send you the link in the chat, and I'll describe it as we are talking, so people can go and search for it themselves. But this is a Harley Benton acoustic from the custom line. Mm-hmm. And it's based obviously on the Gibson J45, which I just think is one of the most beautiful acoustic guitars ever made.
That looks nice.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. So it's from the custom line range again. You know, it's a gorgeous sunburst finish. It's got this beautiful inlay around the sound hall. So for our listeners, if you just go to Harley Benton's website and search for the CLJ-45EVS, that's the acoustic guitar we're talking about. So it's fitted with, a pickup system, a Fishman Precis pickup system, etc. It's really fantastically well appointed. And if you check the price at Tom Ann,
I've just seen the price. What?
Yeah, exactly. It's less than £200. So, and that's a, you know, I mean, this, like I said, this is a solid Sitka spruce top, mahogany body and neck, a Van Gogh fretboard, ball nut. You know, it's not unequipped with things. You should check, honestly, mate, you should check out some of Harley Benton's acoustic models. You'll be really surprised. There are much better acoustic guitars than this one I'm showing you, and this is still a really nice one.
I mean, there has to be like some slight compromises in terms of fit and finish on a guitar that is at this price, right? And that's not based on me having seen one of these, but the specs are effectively mahogany body and neck, right? So it's not some bizarre,
wood. Exactly. It's not like
even if it was £194, solid Sitka spruce top.
Yeah.
This is not a laminate top. This is a proper solid Sitka spruce top, which is going to age and get better. And as the fibers loosen up in that top, the more you play it is going to get louder and better sounding over the years. Bone nut, cream binding, double action truss rod, Fishman pickup system, vintage sunburst finish. What? How is that even possible? That is insane. Amount of guitar for the money.
It is. it's quite mad.
It's got a book matched. Well, that's probably a veneer on the back. But who cares? Yeah. It's wow.
Yeah. Check them out. Go and check them out. Let's move on though, shall we?
Wow. I'm just aghast. Right. I know I'm getting no work done today after this. I'm going down a Harley Benton rabbit hole.
Yeah. Right. Can I choose the next one?
Yes, of course.
I want to talk about Gibson and Kirk Hammett and their latest kind of foray into the marketplace together. So Gibson have just announced that they're launching a custom shot Kirk Hammett Greenie Les Paul. Mm-hmm. You know about this, don't you?
I do. I insofar as I saw the news headlines dropping in and just went, oh, okay.
Yeah. Right, you knew this would wind me up. So I think... I knew it. So Gibson's teamed up with Kirk Hammett to release a custom shop edition of the very famous, you know, the Greenie Les Paul that he owned, you know, the 1959 Les Paul. You know, and everyone knows, you know, the most sought after guitars in the world are the late 50s Les Pauls. And of those guitars, the most sought after of those is the one that Kirk Hammett currently owns. It's Peter Green's Les Paul from Fleetwood Mac that he famously gave to Gary Moore and didn't want anything for. And Gary Moore took it. And then Gary Moore sold it in the late 2000s when he had money troubles. He sold it for about $1 million. Imagine what an uplift on an instrument that you got for nothing. He sold it for, apparently it was somewhere between $750,000 and $1.2 million. And then Kirk Hammett bought it, and he sold it to a collector. But this is a recreation. So what they're saying is that for $19,999, mm-hmm. you can buy your own Murphy Lab Edge take on the legendary mm-hmm. six string. So what do you think about this, Kieran?
Oh. I mean, it's a Les Paul, isn't it? I mean, it's a 59 Les Paul replica, mm-hmm. arguably based on the second most famous Les Paul ever. I don't know. I would argue that the Beano Les Paul from Clapton is more desirable, but then it got nicked, so no one knows where that. Well, actually, Joe Bonamassa knows where it is. I'm not saying he nicked it, but there is actually YouTube clips where he hints at the fact that he does know.
Where
it is? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty close, tight circle, that group of collectors, and within that circle, you can imagine. One of them knows where it is, but I'm not pointing anything at Lord Bonamassa, of course.
It's like, imagine being one of those people. Being one of the most useless trackers in the world, you know, like smelling grass on the floor. The Les Paul's this way. Just a bizarre circle of people to be in, of people who could track down Les Pauls.
Well, these are the people that rule the world. They just got the Illuminati on speed dial, and they just press the button. Would you mind bringing the Beano Les Paul to the sacrifice this weekend?
Sacrifice.
While we're running around in pagan goat legs, could we bring Beano with us? Yes, not a problem.
It could be true. Let's not, just in case they turn up at our door.
Yeah, that's a good point. If this podcast goes off air and we mysteriously disappear, everyone knows why.
Yeah, that's right.
We've either been indoctrinated into the cult, and we then know where Beano is, or we're nuggets.
Oh, I think we'll be nuggets dropped from the sky. Yeah.
We will be the nuggets. Yeah. Anyway, we digress. This story got dark very quickly, didn't it? What do I think of this? Well, first of all, I'm surprised they haven't done this before, because Greeny's guitar is obviously, so renowned. And it has that legacy and it has that story. And I love the fact that this Les Paul is going from owner to owner in different ways, right? Because it keeps that legend alive of it. And it is supposed to be a phenomenal guitar. Isn't this the one where... at some point, when Greeny had it in with a guitar tech, he accidentally reverse phased one of the pickups, and so that middle pickup position tone is elusive.
That's exactly right.
Beautiful tone, which was done by accident, but then he said, "No, don't switch it back. This is how it should be. It's great." So happy accident and all that. I look. Clearly $20,000 for a yet another Murphy Lab love child is just silly.
It's madness.
It is to me.
Yeah.
To Gibson, it's good business sense, because they will sell them. They will be sold. They will make a huge profit on them. And collectors will want them. Mm. They'll probably hold their value, because Gibsons hold their value. Mm-hmm. So it's a smart business choice. It doesn't really do anything for me, because I don't see the additional value in it, right? But they have said that they are going to do a non-Murphy Lab version.
Yes.
And I don't think it's even custom shop. I think they're just going to do a standard version of it, which you would imagine will probably go for... I don't know, what would you guess?
£17,000, probably, something like that. I don't know. Understanding that Gibson currently seem to be a business hell-bent on just profiteering from nonsense, as far as I'm concerned, I imagine it will be, basically, they'll take a standard, like, Honeyburst Les Paul that you can buy for 2,800 quid or whatever. They'll turn the neck pickup around and then they'll double the price. You know, I'm that cynical.
That I can see the anger building.
Yeah, they'll take the pit guard off and turn the front pickup around, and then they'll sell it for a grand more than standard. Because that's all this guitar is. And I've got to say, you said something a minute ago. You said, I'm surprised they've never done this before. This is what bothers me. They have. And I've put a link in the chat.
Oh.
2010, when Gibson launched the Collector's Choice series. Collector's Choice number one was called the Melvin Franks guitar. And he was the collector who owned Greeny at the time. It's the Greeny guitar. They've already they've already done this. They've already made this exact guitar exactly like they're saying they're making it now. They've already done this. And I feel sorry for people who've got Collector's Choice number one, Melvin Franks guitars, because this is probably going to devalue those guitars potentially if there's the same guitar available brand new now. And and that guitar, when they sold it, was half the price of the one that they're selling now.
Limited to 150. Yeah, I can see it now. Collector's Choice number one, Gary Moore butterscotch aged version. I thought they'd done it before.
But this is, it goes to show you that what Gibson's mindset at the time was, they didn't call it the Greeny or the Gary Moore or the Peter Green or the whatever. They named it after the person who collected it and didn't even play it. You know, and I think this is why, you know, I sometimes speak quite angrily about the way Gibson do these kind of things, because I do think that they, you know, they lack a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. What's the word? I've lost it. A little bit of kind of not moral sense. It's not necessarily a moral thing. Just a little bit of professional courtesy to do the right thing, you know, because effectively what they're doing is, you know, there's a little bit of hype around this guitar again because Kirk Hammett's bought it and he's been using it over the last few years. Right. So Gibson, of course, are trying to profiteer off that. Again, they're trying to, you know, you never hear about Gibson's new guitars anymore, new designs or what they're doing. It's always about how close are they trying to get to the old stuff, you know, because I honestly think, you know, there's a sense of regret somewhere deep down in the ranks of Gibson ownership that just wish that they could make money off guitars they sold 70 years ago, that they sold for a standard price that are now worth more than, you know, the GDP of some small countries. It's, do you know what I mean? So I find it frustrating reading that they're launching this guitar and it's 20 grand. And I think you've launched that guitar 10 years ago for half that price. Yeah. You've already done this. Don't talk about it like it's something new. So there we go. That's how I feel about that.
I'm in mixed feelings. I don't know. I do get angry with them as well for this kind of stuff. But the problem is the businessman in me just goes, well, they keep selling them, so people keep buying them. So what are you going to do? Just, you know, they're a business at the end of the day and they've got to sell stuff. And this is the stuff that's, I mean, it's not going to sell in volumes. I think when they did this before, it said that they capped it to 150. This time round, there hasn't been a cap on this, but I think it looks like it's made to order. If people want them, fine, pay us, we'll make you one. It's $20,000. Yeah, fine. Here, take my money.
And for all I know, maybe there's a you know, a research and marketing department within Gibson that just knows that the demand is absolutely there and it is worth doing. Maybe I shouldn't be so cynical. Maybe the guitar itself, rather than, you know, whether Gibson should profit from it or not, maybe the guitar itself does deserve that kind of reverence to be built again. Because let's face it, is there a guitar more beautiful ever in history than a Gibson Les Paul from that time and place? You know,
to me, no. To me, no, but
I don't think so either. I don't think anything's as, I think a really good quality Gibson Les Paul, you know, with the right finish and the right flame on that maple top. Yeah. There's nothing more beautiful in rock and roll. So,
I agree. There's going to be some noise around this. There is for sure. I mean, and there are some big celebrity kind of Les Paul fans. Jason Momoa springs to mind. He puts stuff on YouTube and social media about, you know, the guitars that he gets. He's a big fan of Slash guitars, so he gets all those custom ones that come out. And I'm sure, you know, he's going to get one of these. And you know, Super Rich will buy them. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how much
the standard non-custom shop versions go for, because they are basically going to be exactly what you said, which is a stock run instrument with a reverse neck position pickup, partially out of phase.
Well, I can't see what else. There's no real other difference between the standard guitar and that guitar. You know, that's the other thing, is that these guitars are always, we revere these amazing guitars, but they are just standard model guitars.
Yeah, I think the tuners were changed to Gotos or Grovers or something at one point on this, so they'll probably put those on. The nut's probably a proper bone nut or a Graphtec nut or something. So there might be little bits of that. I mean, a guitar that's been around for this long and gig this much, I don't think people will big into necessarily finding original parts for it. So it's probably got a few little things. But as you say, it's nothing different. So yeah, I'll be interested. Let's have a look and wait and see how much the USA standard Greenie comes out for, and see if Gibson get it right. Because if they price it at the $2,000-$3,000 mark, which is, you know, kind of where it should be priced, I'll be kind of like, okay, fair play to you. You've done the ones for the people that can afford a $20,000 version of it, and you've done it for the people that would like to save up and have a piece of that as well. I don't know. I remain slightly skeptical, like you, though, that it will come out at a sensible
price. Too. So let's wait and see. Right. Next on the list of things in news, and I think we need to talk about something funny. But let's talk about the JHS Digitech Bad Monkey thing that's happened recently.
I do think this is funny.
It's really funny.
This is on my to-do list of things this weekend, because I haven't actually seen this yet, but it is it's only been around for the last kind of month or so, this story, but it is gaining a head of steam to it. So if I've understood it right, this is all around, centering around the Bad Monkey tube overdrive pedal, right? Digitech JHS, right?
Mm.
Now, this pedal has been around for a long time, but this year in January, I think it was, I'm trying to find the exact, it doesn't matter, but basically a video came out from JHS, basically ABing this Bad Monkey, which is pretty much seen as a cheap Tube Screamer-esque pedal.
Yeah, it's almost kind of the kind of thing you'd buy.
Yeah,
if you absolutely have no money, then you can just afford a few quid to buy yourself an overdrive pedal. It's you know, Digitech Bad Monkey. It's the kind of pedal that you would got for free with a guitarist subscription like 5 years ago, isn't it? Man. It's that kind of thing. Guitarist magazine. Take out your subscription and you get a Digitech Bad Monkey.
Right. So, yeah. So it was on, sorry. So JHS Pedals, a YouTube channel, posted this video that basically put this Bad Monkey up against a few stomp boxes, right? We're used to watching videos like that all the time.
Yeah.
Right. But this is the funny element, right? Is they put it up against a Klon Centaur.
Mm-hmm.
Which, anytime you put a video up about a Klon Centaur and something that is trying to get close to it, you will sell volumes of the thing that is trying to get close to it, because not everyone can get hold of a ridiculously priced, I don't know what they're going for now, $3,000, $4,000, probably more. It's just insane.
But
the point is that when they did a side-by-side shootout, he got it to sound like a Klon Centaur, which is fantastic. It's hilarious. And I love that concept and notion, because it is very much aligned to something that I'm evangelical about, which is like, use your ears and just dial in your stuff and wonderful things will happen. And we'll go on to that rant in a minute. But anyway, the net effect of this video coming out obviously sent the prices of the Digitech Bad Monkey through the roof, which is hilarious.
Through the roof. Like crazy amounts of money.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's fantastic. I think that's hilarious. I think that just shows how, as guitar players, how stupid we all are, really.
Do you know what I love the most about this is obviously Josh Smith over at JHS has been given a lot of heat for what he's done with that video. And his response is absolutely perfect. He said, to the people complaining that I raised the price on this pedal and now you can't buy one, I would like to remind you that you had 19 years to buy one, but you never cared. This pedal has existed 4 years longer than JHS as a company has. And most guitarists have hated on it since day one. No one kept you from trying it in 2004. And then exactly as you said, learn to listen with your ears, not trends, and you'll be a much happier guitarist. So I applaud that. I absolutely applaud that response.
Yeah. I really do. I genuinely do. And look, I'm as much of an idiot as the next guitarist who watches these YouTube videos about pedals and guitars or whatever and goes, I know that pedal's got, you know, they're not playing through anything like my rig or my guitar, but they've made it sound like that. So I'll go and buy one and plug it in and hope to get the same results. But every time I've done that, it's been for the worse, or I've had to spend a considerable amount of time. And the best things with my tone, be it modeling gear, be it pedal board stuff, be it amps, is just use your ears and don't obsess about where you think the knob should be set and what settings it should be on and all of that. Just listen and use your ears.
Absolutely.
And when you do that, wonderful things happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Go out and buy that wish.com clone. You know,
I did. Exactly. I love it.
Just, you know, hopefully the wish.com will start doing a Bad Monkey clone soon as well, and then people can have that. But I just love that bit of news. I think it was great. Just well played, Josh Smith, for showing people. He's basically what he's done. He's held up a mirror to the worst part of the pedal community. To the worst part of it, the absolute worst part of it, that thinks that that good tone is proportionate to money spent, which is not true. It's good tone is proportionate to the amount of time you spend listening and dialing in your sound.
Correct.
Exactly like you said. You know, yes, you can buy things that improve your tone, but it doesn't mean that the more you spend, the better your tone gets. That's not true. You know, some of the best pedals that I've ever played through have been some of the, you know, cheapest, nastiest things that you could buy. And I still really enjoyed playing through them. It's just, it's just nonsense. So I that's what I love about this the most is his response is fantastic.
It is.
All he's done is he's just exposed a lot of bad thought, and I think he's exposed a lot of the pedal community for what it is, which is a little bit of a, it's too much cork sniffery going on. You know, I've said that before.
Snake oil. I call it snake oil, which is like, buy this pedal and all of a sudden, you know, everything in your life will be perfect. It's kind of like, come on. All right. But do you know what? It's validated, like, the purchases that I've made in the past where I've got some really cheap pedals and I've bought them and gigged them and I don't care. I love gigging cheap pedals that work. Yeah. But it's also made me feel a little bit better about holding on to some of those because they were cheap anyway. And you think, oh, should I just sell them? And I just thought, no, I'll just wait. I'll just wait until another one of these videos comes out. And then the price will go through the roof and then I'll sell it.
Exactly.
Because silly things like this happen, right? I bet the people that are owning these Bad Monkeys that are trying to get rid of it are like, bloody hell, this is great. Yeah. I can sell it for 500 quid now.
Which is brilliant. Exactly, yeah. And then I'll put that 500 quid towards, a clone for £6,000.
Honestly, that was proof in point. But my wish.com clone, which if I keep talking about it, will invariably raise the price of that through the roof. So I realise the hypocrisy of which I'm now talking with. But anyway, let's move on to something else. But that was funny news.
Well, I think we should. I mean, let's wrap up with one last bit of news. And I think this one, this one for me is a little bit bittersweet because. I don't know what's going to change in the future for this brand.
Mm.
Arguably one of the biggest brands in our industry from the UK.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the biggest brands ever in guitar. But Marshall amps have been sold to a Swedish speaker company, effectively bringing an end to family ownership. Maybe not many people know, but you know, the iconic British guitar manufacturer Marshall have always been owned by the Marshall family right from back when Jim Marshall himself and his son started the company in a music store in London and started building amps to satisfy demand for guitar amplifiers that was, you know, happening at the time, but because of, you know, importation and things like that, you know, getting amps from the USA that, you know, these guitarists wanted, it wasn't easy. So they very quickly designed some amplifiers, and obviously that's where Marshall sprang from. But so it's been sold to a company called Zound, which is apparently a company that they've been working, that Marshall Group have been working with for a long time, right, to create things like the Marshall headphones and Marshall Bluetooth speakers. So nothing to do with guitar amps, just Marshall-branded accessories, basically.
They're a big company. They're a big company in that kind of line of doing things. So, and it's nice that there is that partnership already that exists. But as you say, it is, Well, the nice thing is that the two firms, Zound and Marshall, look like it's going to sit underneath the Marshall name now.
Yes.
So it's going to be called the Marshall Group. And the Marshall family, the details of how much this deal and all kind of netted out haven't been released. But the Marshall family is still going to own a quarter of the new company. But as you say, it's a big departure from what we here in the UK as well, I think, particularly, feel a sense of pride around as a guitarist that Marshall is that UK heritage brand, that family owned brand that is globally synonymous with live music. Jim Marshall used to go to the guitar shows back in the day. I met him and got a signed poster for. Oh yeah, man. He was always out and about into his kind of autumn years of life.
Yeah.
If there was a guitar show like happening somewhere, it was not uncommon that he would have a stall there just to do meet and greets for free, just to meet people. And I went to a guitar show, a while ago, because obviously, sadly, he's passed. But it was a guitar show in Southampton. So it's not even like central London or anything like that. And it was a guitar show in Southampton, big expose. And, you know, all these guitar dealers and stalls there selling stuff. And there's Jim Marshall with a little kind of one trestle table, banner stand, sitting there having a cup of tea in the corner. Obviously with a queue of people just going, dude, that's Jim Marshall. You go, no, can't be. Like, you just go up and have a chat with him and he'd sign your poster. And that was a moment in my life. I was like, wow, this is cool. You built my amp. Well, not you personally, but
But still, What do you think of that? I mean, in my mind, I've been kind of putting like a few scenarios through it and thinking, what's the worst thing that can happen? But what is actually the worst thing that can happen from this takeover? You know, I mean, obviously, Marshall have always been very true to their own cause, haven't they, in terms of amp design and protecting their brand, protecting their sound. They've not always, they've not always necessarily been led away from their own kind of purpose as a designer. You can always rely on Marshall amps to have that Marshall sound, whatever they've done, but they still always try to kind of innovate in the right areas that support that.
Sure.
I think that maybe there's going to be influence now from people who have now bought themselves absolute influence that maybe takes them away from that. Or maybe even just, you know, sometimes brands get lost within a bigger company when they get purchased. Do you know what I mean?
Of course they do. I'm thinking about the time, like, when was it Gibson started buying companies like Denon and things like that, and it was all kind of a bit confusing because it was like out of their lane. Well, not a complete departure, but not like directly linked. I think the thing that encourages me, but as you say, time will tell, and business is business. But This is a Swedish company who have had very close links to the UK working with Marshall. They themselves have said that any product that they did with Marshall was co-designed and ultimately signed off by a UK Marshall engineer to that standard, because they understand the pedigree and the heritage of that. So that's cool.
That is cool. Yeah.
That they're saying they recognize that. I think the other thing, hopefully that will still continue, and it sounds like they recognize this, is that there is a pedigree and premium, if I can say that, around UK manufactured Marshall. That's kind of the vibe, isn't it? It's like champagne from France, right? It's kind of that is the vibe. And I know some in more recent years, some of the modeling stuff and the very cheaper end stuff for Marshall did start to get made in the Far East, Vietnam, I think.
Yeah.
But predominantly the core Marshall stuff still made in the UK. And so at the moment, it doesn't look like there's any, I mean, there wouldn't be, it's far too early. This deal has only just happened in the last couple of days. There doesn't seem to be any desire to shift away the production from glamorous Milton Keynes to anywhere else. But time will tell, right? Efficiency is the name of the game when it comes to helping a brand stay relevant. But it's definitely momentous, right?
Because it's huge, yeah.
You know. So I'm hoping the promise will remain, which is nothing's gonna change effectively for the consumer, and this is just strengthening Marshall for the next phase of its onward journey.
Yeah, I hope for the same things. I hope that this is strengthening for Marshall. I hope that they're allowed to continue doing what they do, from, you know, designing new products and coming up with new innovations and protecting that Marshall sound. You know, when people talk about the, you know, a British amp sound, people are often talking about what it means to play through a Marshall, right?
Exactly.
But I point this back, you know, in a cynical way to CBS's takeover of Fender. And in a similar way, that was, you know, a management, it was a buyout of the business, but, you know, the people remained and the manufacturing facilities remained. But slowly and over time through the, you know, late 60s and 70s, their influence came, you know, it kind of came home to roost in a way, and that they made changes that were effectively there purely just to try and make them more profitable. And, right down to things like, you know, logo, so we must sell more, you know, and so I worry that that's going to happen. You know what I mean? I worry that there are going to be decisions and influences in what they do that really don't benefit the guitarist at all. Because in the long run, those guitarists are your customers, and it's your customers you have to please. So
it is. And if there's anything to learn from the Gibson roller coaster over the years, as an interesting parallel, is stick to your heritage and your core brand value, and things will be fine. You know, in the same way that Gibson struggled to bring innovation and change to that product range, because that's not what people want from Gibson. Do it with other brands, that's fine, but Gibson tried that, and now through this new era, they've tried to get back to the things that people wanted, which was good quality control, good traditional instruments made the traditional way without any crazy innovation. That is a departure from, as you said earlier in the show, Matt, what they did in 1959. You know, please keep giving us that, because that's what we want. Yeah. Right? And Marshall have, to some extent, innovated in the amp way with headphones and speakers and all of that, and even got into the modeling side of things, and which is great. That's what you need to do to stay relevant. But fundamentally, I'd like to think there'll always be a place for a Valve Marshall. You know,
absolutely.
To plug your 59 Gibson Les Paul into.
Well, there we go. I mean, you know, I think some of the most, certainly for me, if I think about what the most important guitar tones are, to me, a huge majority of them are a Les Paul into a Marshall, you know.
Yeah.
I think about things like, you know, Thin Lizzy on the Black Rose album. That's actually Gary Moore on that Les Paul into, you know, probably a JTM or, you know, something like that. And, it's just a timeless sound, you know. So, Please don't take that away from us.
I wonder what will happen to the price of Marshalls right now. Like, are people going to go and buy up all of the pre-Zounds era Marshalls?
It's a good deal on DSLs at the moment.
There is.
Isn't there? Yeah, you could. Here recently, you could pick up a Marshall DSL 40 watt combo for about less than £400, I think, brand new.
That's an incredible deal.
Because that is a proper Marshall sounding combo as well. But anyway, dude.
Yeah, man. We're in danger of causing a unnecessary hype.
Let's not do a Josh. Let's not do a JHS. Yeah.
Exactly.
You've had 60 years to buy Marshall amps, everyone. Come on.
Exactly. Nice one, buddy.
Brilliant. Mate,
that was,
been
that
great.
Was fun. That was fun. I enjoyed that. It was a good news. It was good news week. Some funny news, some sad news, some.
Yeah, let us. You know, if you're listening, let us know what you thought of this one, because obviously sometimes we talk about very specific things, but this is a catch up on what we thought was some interesting and you know, important news that's in the kind of industry at the moment. But maybe we should do this more often, maybe on a monthly basis or whatever, bi-monthly. Maybe we should have a guitar news podcast to catch people up on what's out there. Let us know what you think. If you think that you'd enjoy that, then let us know over on the Guitar Geek Hangout on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic stuff, mate. Love the chat, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, mate, me too.
And same time again next week, my friend.
Same time. All the best, buddy. I'll speak to you
soon. Pal.
Cheers, pal.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you hear, then remember there's 70 odd other episodes going back over 2 years now that you can check out, where we talk about all kinds of things like the best budget guitar amps, Murphy Lab guitars, a visit to the London Guitar Show. Go and enjoy them. Anyway, best wishes. See you next time on the Guitar Smarts Podcast.